You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com. Lee Ellis of The Athletic. We had to get him on, right? With this news about Kevin Durant, of course, NBA free agency, to help us kind of understand what's going to happen now as he joins us right here on Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. How are you, Lee?
Fine, thanks, Tony. How are you?
Good. Kevin Durant wants to leave Brooklyn. How surprising the news was this? Was there a feeling that he was actually going to request a trade?
Well, look, this was rumored sort of a week or so ago. Maybe not that he was going to ask out, but the Nets were maybe looking to move on. And so I think Kevin Durant maybe, look, we don't know those internal discussions, but if he said to them, are you guys looking to trade me? And they said yes. He said, all right, well, I want out too, then I want to go somewhere else. Who knows exactly how these things break down? But I when I heard Joe Tsai, the owner, and Sean Marks say that they didn't want a repeat of what happened this season just gone, and that was the internal chaos and the drama that was with James Harden and Kyrie, and Kevin Durant was involved in that. I think everyone probably looking around the locker room saying, yeah, look, let's have a clean start here and try something else, because it was a pretty chaotic season, and it obviously ended in, you know, a very short playoff run. They only played four games and lost all of them. So now Kevin Durant has really just torched NBA free agency by saying, you know, it doesn't really matter where everyone else signs. Now, where is Kevin Durant going to land next?
So it would be like if I had a Ferrari and it was kind of breaking down and I needed it fixed, wouldn't it be better to fix the Ferrari than buy a Mazda? No offense to Mazda.
I mean, that's the thing. I think from where we stand, you know, that's what you would think. But from what I have now sort of garnered from Kevin Durant throughout his career is, he sort of needs to be feel like that he's totally loved by everyone in the organization. And if he doesn't, then he sort of feels like maybe he's slighted in some way, because the Golden State Warriors, remember, offered him $200 million to stay there. And he turned that down to go to Brooklyn, because I think he felt inside that even though he'd just won a couple of championships, he was a finals MVP there, the talk was like, yeah, but they're not real champion. I mean, they are. He doesn't have to validate his career to anybody, but I think there was a part of him that was like, I need to go out and get another championship here without being on the Warriors team. Because, look, he did kind of piggyback off that team, and he was a great player. He is a great player. He's a lock for the Hall of Fame, all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, I think he also realized, like, you know, I want to just go and get one without Steph Curry, without Draymond Green, without Klay Thompson, and just to sort of maybe silence some of the doubters and the critics. That's never going to happen with Kevin Durant, because he invites so much drama and criticism into his own life. And now I think he's there in Brooklyn. He's looking around, and I think he also looks at the Kyrie situation. He has no idea what he's going to get out of Kyrie each season, and he's decided, okay, it's time to try a different city and a different place. Now, this is different because he's not a free agent. When he left the Warriors, he was a free agent. When he left the Thunder, he was a free agent. Now he's got 4 years. He's guaranteed on that contract. So he doesn't have quite that same freedom to just say, right, I'm just going to sign with these guys or that team. The Nets have to find a team that actually can match his salary and then get some players and picks and things like that. So this one will be a lot more complicated than it has been in the past, where he's just decided to sign as a free agent with whichever team he chooses.
If this thing is kind of busted up and the Nets start all over and Durant's winning with somewhere else, and if we look back on this 3 years, and again, COVID was in the middle of it, I get that, but how much of the Kyrie situation will we go, man, that guy, that team could have won a championship, and that guy created problems with Durant, it created problems with Harden, consistency. How much does Kyrie's legacy fall on these 3 years where they weren't the team we thought they were going to be?
Yeah, well, look, he's a very complicated character, because there's no question about his talent when he's out on the floor, but you just have to wonder what his energy is like in the locker room, what his vibe is like. That's what the buzzword is these days, because it certainly seems like Kyrie just dances to his own tune. And when he feels like playing, he's fantastic. But as we've seen over the last couple of seasons, there'll be times where he just says, you know what, I'm just not playing. I'm not going to play. He chose not to get vaccinated last season, which meant that he couldn't play. And he stood by that. And you heard James Harden, maybe not directly, but certainly in an indirect way, saying that he didn't want to play there because he didn't know what he was going to get out of his teammate. And I think that also affected Kevin Durant. I think it affected the relationship with Steve Nash. And so Yeah, Kyrie, now he obviously opted into his contract, so he's technically still a Brooklyn Net, but I think the chances of him staying on the Nets this season are very, very remote. They're going to try to move him on as quickly as they can too, but he's also like, I mean, who wants Kyrie and with that potential baggage that he brings? I mean, you want him to be the star on the court, but you just know that that's not the only thing you get with Kyrie. He can't just push that stuff to the side. So it's going to be fascinating. But look, if you're Brooklyn, I don't think this is the worst case scenario, though, because you know, as I said, with Durant, with his big contract, you know you're going to get good young players back, and you're probably going to get some draft capital. And if you move on from Kyrie, then they could still be a good team next season with some good young talent there. I mean, the rumor that's out there that I think is probably the hottest at the moment is they might end up with DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges in return for Kevin Durant, and then if you can move off Kyrie, so that's not bad. That's good young talent in return. So it Brooklyn aren't necessarily headed for a disaster season next season. They could choose draft capital, but they're just, again, as I say, with Durant's contract, they're going to have to get some good players back in return to make those numbers work. So I think Brooklyn, if they've decided, okay, we tried it, we got the big three, it didn't work, let's move on. Well, you're going to get some good players back. And, I mean, they've got Ben Simmons. Who knows exactly what you get out of him? But he's a young guy under contract as well. So this is not like a complete disaster here for Brooklyn. I think once you realize you've come to the end of the run with a certain group, the quicker you move on and the quicker you can get back good young players, then that rebuild doesn't have to be a 4 or 5 year project.
All right, let's talk about some of the moves that were made yesterday. And this was brewing, and it was made official. Jalen Brunson goes from Dallas to the Knicks. He pretty much quadruples his salary, which is awesome for the young man. Jalen Brunson was interestingly, because when we were talking about Dallas, and we would say, like, when Dallas was struggling in the playoffs in their series, and we said, look, they got to get Jalen Brunson. It can't be all Luka. That's really a good testament to a guy who was the 33rd pick in the draft. Does Brunson make the Knicks that much better, though? Like, what does this do for New York?
Well, no, I don't think it makes them significantly better. I think it improves them. They Kemba Walker last season struggled to stay on the court. And when he was on the court defensively, he was pretty ordinary. So I think Brunson is an upgrade in that area. But again, it's not that much of an upgrade that you all of a sudden project the Knicks to finish in the top four in the Eastern Conference. Look, RJ Barrett, very good player, but he's certainly not a number one guy. And Julius Randle wasn't able to back up his season the year before, where he was most improved and he became an all-star. He was great. So the Knicks got better yesterday, but they're still missing that key piece, I think. And I think that, the Brunson, a little bit of an overpay, sure. They wanted to get a guy in there and they got him, but they've still got plenty of work to do, because I think they've got a lot of holes in that roster. And, the big question, of course, is Mitchell Robinson. What are they going to do with him? They signed Isaiah Hartenstein from the Clippers there. So they obviously feel that Mitchell Robinson is good, but he's another one who struggles to stay on the floor. So they got better. They had to make this move. If you're Jalen Brunson, you know what you're getting yourself into going to New York. Like, they expect you to be immediately fantastic and immediately good from the start and sort of in that all-star conversation. Otherwise, it's going to turn pretty quickly on him. And I just wonder if he's going to look back at this move and think he was in a better situation in Dallas, where he didn't have the same expectations as he's automatically going to have there in New York, where, okay, maybe he's not the superstar player on the team. He's always going to be behind Luka. But again, going to New York, a franchise that we know gets a bit chaotic, very early into the season, if things aren't going their way, does the money compensate for that when you are leaving a situation in Dallas where your role and your ability there and your trust with the organization was pretty clear that they valued him as a good player, but he was never going to take over the number one spot from Luka.
All right, John Wall to the Clippers, didn't play with the Rockets last season, a year fresh. How does it help the Clippers?
Well, I mean, he desperately wants to play. He wanted to play there in Houston last season, and they sort of said, no, we'll try to trade you. But, of course, his contract was virtually untradeable at that point, because we just hadn't seen him out on the court. But if they can get the John Wall from anywhere from, 4 or 5 seasons ago, where he was still a decent player, this is a huge get for the Clippers. But, again, we just haven't seen him out on the court. So until we do, he's never going to be the all-star again. He's never going to be that sort of superstar player. But if you can just get a reliable guy out there who can, you know, hit that mid-ranger, he can get inside, he's a good defensive player, then he's good for the Clippers. But it's so hard to really identify what type of player you're going to get, because his knees and his ankles have cost him so much of his prime years that he just needs to get out there on the court and start playing again and having fun. So the Clippers, they obviously don't have tons of wiggle room themselves because of the Paul George contract, because of the Kawhi Leonard contract. So they have to just improve around the fringes. And they get a veteran in there who should be good. I mean, he should play alongside Reggie Jackson. So, you know, on paper, it's good. But just when a guy's missed so much time, it's hard to see him sort of slotting back in there and immediately ramping up to becoming the player that he used to be. And we remember, I mean, John Wall, one of the fastest players in the NBA. You're probably never going to see that speed again. But, you know, he was a very, very capable point guard for his prime years there in Washington. And the Clippers are hoping they just get, I guess, you know, 50 or 60% of that guy.
Who are we still waiting on? DeAndre Ayton's one of them, right?
Yeah, well, DeAndre
and Zach Ayton, LaVine?
Zach LaVine's another one too, yeah. I think DeAndre Ayton's a big one because, you know, it's like, are the Suns going to sign and trade him, or are they going to just re-sign him? It's quite clear to me that the Suns don't want to offer him the max. And it seems also that DeAndre Ayton and his people are like, we're not accepting anything less than the max. So in that sense, I think the stalemate will present that the Suns say, okay, we'll sign you and trade you and get someone back in return, because he's a good player, but maybe he hasn't quite taken that leap that they were hoping for. And I think as well, what maybe was actually bad for DeAndre Ayton this season was when they brought in Bismack Biyombo off the scrap heap, he actually played really well for them. JaVale McGee played well for them. So I think they maybe look and say, hey, listen, we've got Chris Paul, we've got Devin Booker, we've got Mikal Bridges for now. Maybe we don't need to invest a huge amount for a guy who you know, his numbers are modest at sort of 17 and 12 there. It's like, I'm not sure he is worth that supermax. So I wouldn't be surprised if DeAndre Ayton is traded at some point in the next few days, because I just don't think he and the Suns are going to agree on a figure that's right for both of them to keep him in Phoenix.
Lee Ellis, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much for helping us break down what we had yesterday, especially the big news on Durant.
Anytime, Tony. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Now, Lee Ellis, again from The Athletic, host of the No Dunks podcast. Check that out. And when we come back, we'll wrap up the hour as Wake Up Call continues.